Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. I wonder whether, because of being too attached to the members of your family, you fail to properly receive uninvited guests, who therefore were not welcomed and went away. Purport. It is a duty of a householder to receive guests, even if a guest be an enemy. When a guest comes to one's home, one should properly receive him by standing up and offering him a seat. It is enjoined, Grihe shatrum api praptam vishwastam akuto bhayam. If even an enemy comes to one's home, one should receive him in such a way that the guest will forget that his host is an enemy. According to one's position, one should properly receive anyone who comes to one's home. At least a seat and a glass of water should be offered, so that the guest will not be displeased. Kashyapa Muni inquired from Aditi whether disrespect had been shown to such guests or atithis. The word atithi refers to one who comes without an invitation. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Itam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So before I begin, I'd like to request the blessings from all the assembled Vaishnavas, in particular His Grace Tapa Vipra. So recently I was at a meeting. It was a meeting for something called SACRE. SACRE is the Standing Advisory Council for Religious Education. So these are meetings which, for the Borough of Harrow, and the idea is to coordinate and advise religious education teachers at primary schools and secondary schools across the Borough of Harrow. So these meetings happen once a term, so three or four meetings per year. And recently I was at one of these meetings, and one of the discussions or concerns that was going on, that many students across the borough, Harrow is actually one of the most multicultural boroughs in London and in the country. There's actually more ethnic minorities than there are Western kids, and that's quite rare for most boroughs. So one of the concerns was that many, many children from many different faiths are taking days off school which aren't within the school calendar, and it's for various religious festivals. And so, wearing my Hindu hat, I attend these meetings, and so from a Hindu perspective, I had to give some insight as to what holidays are bona fide, what holidays are justified for students to take off, and what holidays aren't. So one comment that I made was that within the Hindu scriptures, within the Hindu calendar, there are so many different festivals. Actually, I explained that every day could be a festival. Every day someone could take a day off for one particular reason or another. So people laughed at that. But we see how rich our tradition is. Every day is so special. Sometimes because a personality has appeared, sometimes because a personality has left, sometimes because, for example, on Monday is Dussehra, on Sunday we have a festival for Dussehra. So it's a time when Lord Ram fought Ravana and won the battle in Lanka. So there are so many wonderful days, so many wonderful festivals. They say in the spiritual world, every word is a song, every step is a dance, and every day is a festival. So within this wonderful festivities, we have such a rich culture. And so this purport today, Prabhupada is really talking about culture. He's talking about respect. So we'll be talking about that. But I was just meditating on how special our culture is, and in particular, our scriptures. We have so many wonderful, amazing scriptures which give such deep insights into the world around us and into the lives that we should live in order to really perfect our lives. And the crown jewel amongst all those scriptures is the Purana Amalam, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which provides us with so many stories and so many wonderful insights into how to live perfectly in this world. So here we're in a very nice part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the 8th canto, and we're talking about Bali Maharaj. So in previous classes and in previous weeks, we've been hearing about Bali Maharaj and how he took over the kingdom of heaven, how he took over the kingdom of the demigods. And so in this particular situation, Aditi, who's the mother of the demigods, is very upset. She's very sad because her demigods, her sons, don't have the kingdom. Now it's interesting, if we go back a bit to the 3rd canto, we see that much of the 3rd canto and part of the 4th canto is a discussion between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. So Vidura is taking instruction from Maitreya Muni. And along the course of this discussion, the story of Maitreya Muni begins to explain the story of Varahadev and Hiranyaksha. So Hiranyaksha is a very terrible demon who steals the earth and takes it to the nether regions. And Varahadev comes to save the world and take it back to the position where it should be. So Vidura asks an interesting question here in the 3rd canto. He says, so how did this battle take place, and who is this Hiranyaksha? Where did he come from, and how did it come to such a bad situation? So therefore, Maitreya Muni then begins to explain the pastime of Kashyapa Muni and Diti. So here we're talking about Kashyapa and another wife called Aditi. But in the 3rd canto, Maitreya Muni explains the pastime of Kashyapa and Diti. So Kashyapa Muni was in trance. He was meditating very deeply. He was a sage. But one evening, Diti was feeling, first of all, she had a great need, and her need was to have children. Every mother needs children. So she wanted children, and one evening she was feeling very desirous. And so she approached Kashyapa Muni, and she actually disturbed his trance. She disturbed his meditation. And she persuaded Kashyapa Muni to engage. And so Kashyapa Muni eventually agreed, because this was his very loyal wife. And so she became pregnant as a result. But Kashyapa Muni explained that for every action, there is a reaction. And because of the situation, because of the circumstances under which these children were conceived, there will be two children born of this union. But they will be, their activities will be atrocious. Because it was evening time, because it wasn't planned, it doesn't seem like the various samskaras were undertaken. These children will be only a cause of lamentation, he explained. Their activities will be very terrible. And so he said that this wasn't a very good idea. So Diti, she felt very remorseful as a result. And so One other thing that Kashyapa Muni explained was that because she was a good person, because she was feeling remorseful, and because she was a devotee of the Lord, one child would be born in her family who would be a pure devotee. And that, of course, was Prahlad. So this was a benediction that she was given. So, of course, Prahlad Maharaj was born. But we see that in today's world, most children are born in this way, unplanned, unregulated, due to lust. And so it's interesting, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjun, he's worrying. He's saying that if all of these warriors, 640 million warriors, if all of these men are killed, then who will uphold the principles of religion? He says everyone that will be born will be, because if the warriors, if those individuals are not upholding religious principles, then the women will be unprotected, they will be exploited, and everyone born from such union will be Varna Shankara. So it's interesting that in this age, in today's age, everyone, most children that are born, there are no samskaras, and it's very unregulated, and therefore we see that the children that are born do not have samskaras. Just going out on the streets, when you're distributing books, you see at just 12 and 13, young children, the way they're dressed, the way they talk, the way they interact, it's really very, very gross. Shows no culture. It's bereft of culture. And ultimately, people become miserable. So, Diti, she knew what was to come. And therefore, she kept, of course, this is many centuries ago, she kept those children within her womb, it's explained, for 100 years. Because she knew that once these children were born, they would cause havoc. But eventually, of course, she had to give birth to these children. And when the progeny were born, it's described that the whole universe became dark. And from then, they began their various atrocities. But it's interesting if we compare the activities of Diti to those of Aditi. Aditi is the mother of the demigods. And she sees that Bali Maharaj has won the kingdom. And the demigods were chased away from the heavenly planets. And so she was very upset. She wanted her children, she wanted the demigods to be in charge of the heavenly planets. And therefore she approached her husband, Kashyapa Muni. And she asked him, how can we solve this situation? How can I have my children overlooking and being in charge of heaven? Because that's the way it should be. So Kashyapa Muni advised her to undertake this Vrata, the Payal Vrata. So this Payal Vrata, we'll be hearing more about this fasting and the various ritualistic activities involved. But payal means milk. So it's a milk vrata in essence. And it's explained that for 12 days, one should take only milk. And there are various other injunctions which are described, one of them being one should take the earth which has been dug up by a boar, take the earth and use it to bathe oneself. And there are a string of other various rules and regulations which are described. But after these 12 days, we see that Aditi has the darshan of the Lord. And the Lord agrees to appear as her child. And he comes, of course, in the form of Vamanadev. So Vamanadev comes, and we all know that he asks for 3 steps of land from Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj, being a pure devotee of the Lord, he agrees. And in agreeing, he ends up giving away the kingdom back to the demigods. So from this pastime, a basic understanding that we can learn is the difference between the divine and the demoniac. Chapter 16 in the Gita is entitled The Divine and the Demoniac Natures. And so Shastra is described as the dividing line between the divine and the demoniac. Sometimes we can wonder, what is it that really helps us to understand what is divine and what is demonic? So it's explained that the Shastra conjunctions help us to decide what is right and what is wrong. And at the end of the day, Krishna is very clear. He explains that if things are done in auspiciousness according to the injunctions, then the result will be auspicious. But if things are done against the Shastric injunctions, then the result will be inauspicious. So he says, Ya Shastra Vidhim Utsarjya Vartate Kama Karata Nasi Siddhim Avapnoti Nasukam Na Param Gitim. So if one follows the Shastric injunctions, or if one doesn't follow the Shastric injunctions and rather acts whimsically, then Nasi Siddhim, he will not achieve perfection. Nasukam, he will not be happy. Na Param Gitim, nor will he achieve the ultimate destination. So it's very clear that we should very scrutinizingly, as Prabhupada said, study the Shastras and understand what is right and what is wrong. Just going back to the purport, what is really being explained here, and it's very fundamental to the Vedic paradigm, is respect, is a culture of respect. So the Vedic culture is a culture of respect, in essence. But what we find in today's world more and more is a culture of disrespect. There's a culture where it's based on egalitarianism. So in today's world, everyone's equal. Everyone has equal rights. And this may be a wonderful thing, but at the end of the day, what it means is that people feel equal to one another. So there's no respect. A child doesn't respect his parents because everyone's equal. A student doesn't respect his teachers. A person at work doesn't respect his boss. This mood of respect, this culture of respect, is so much missing in today's world. And it's really based on humility. Humility leads to respect. So when we're actually really humble within the heart, then we find it very easy to give respect to everyone around us. So everyone is worthy of respect, especially in devotee circles. Because Vaishnavas are so rare. How many Vaishnavas are there in the world? A few hundred thousand maybe. How many people are actually within the society of ISKCON and practicing according to Srila Prabhupada's instructions? So devotees are so rare, and it's a wonderful meditation to have to just understand that amongst the 7 billion people in this world, there are only a few hundred thousand Vaishnavas, devotees of Lord Krishna, who are following according to Prabhupada's instructions. And so how, what a wonderful facility we have to be living with, to be serving with, to be surrounded by the devotees of the Lord. And so how we should really take advantage of the situation that we find ourselves in. And so before I continue, I'd just like to make a disclaimer that I'm preaching to myself more than I'm preaching to anyone else. But humility, we say the verse every morning. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said that we should tie this verse like a mala around our necks and meditate on this verse regularly. But he says, Trinadapi suni chena, tarorapi sahishnuna, mani na manandena, kirtaniya sadahari. That we should think oneself lower than the straw on the street. We should be more tolerant than a tree. We should be devoid of false prestige. We should offer respects to everyone. So everyone that we see, we should be respectful towards them, but expect no respect in return. So it's a very deep and wonderful meditation, and if we can see, how can I apply this in a practical way in my everyday life? How often do we catch ourselves thinking, why did he not respect me? Or he should respect me? Or expecting oneself to be the reciprocal of respect or honor from others. So this is it's the symptom of a diseased mind, of a diseased consciousness. Bibi Gurinder Maharaj was explaining that when Shridhar Swami, the godbrother of Srila Prabhupada, when he was leaving, he went to see him. He went to visit him, and he paid his dandavats, and he asked for forgiveness for any offences which he may have caused. And Shridhar Swami's humility was so deep. He said, of course, he's talking to a junior. He's talking to Bibi Gurinder Maharaj, who's his junior. But he said to him that, I'm not a Vaishnava. So there's no chance of you disrespecting me. There's no chance of you causing any apradhas to me. He said, I pray every day to the dogs of Vrindavan that one day I will become a Vaishnava. So this is a pure devotee. Prabhupada was very close with Sri Goswami. And he praised him a lot. So he is saying that I pray every day to the dogs of Vrindavan that I can become a Vaishnava. So this wonderful mood is the ornament of a Vaishnava. Humility is the ornament of a Vaishnava. And so you can see someone who's advanced. They say that one's advancement is judged by their humility. How much are they really humble, especially in their interactions with other devotees? But sometimes this culture of respect and humility is seen by many as a detail. So we have the process of Krishna consciousness. And that's hearing and chanting, and that's really the essence. When we look at the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava, humility is there. But Prabhupada outlines that surrender to the Lord is the key quality, is the essence, which then brings all of the other qualities. So very often these cultural aspects are ignored. But if we're very clear on the aim, our aim is Krishna praying. We want to love Krishna. We want to become lovers of Krishna. If that is the step one, that is our goal. So we say start with why, start with the goal. We have to start with the aim of our lives. And the aim is to be a pure devotee of Krishna. Then we have to see what is a process. Step two is to see what is a process by which we can get to that aim. And the process, of course, is a process of Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting. So, for example, if you want to go to the hospital, because you're sick, you go to the hospital and the process you undergo is the taking of medicine. So one takes medicine in the hospital. But then surrounding that, there has to be a culture. So in order to practice the process of Krishna consciousness, there has to be a particular culture, an environment which facilitates the practice of Krishna consciousness. So just like if you go to the hospital, you take the medicine, so you follow the directions of the doctor, but at the same time, the hospital has to be clean. If the hospital is not clean, then it's likely that you'll catch the disease again or you won't get better. So similarly, a culture, an environment has to be there in order for Krishna consciousness to be supported, in order for the practice to be supported. And actually, this mood of offering respect to others allows us, and taking authority, very often we live in a world where authority is frowned upon. No one wants authority. Everyone wants to be free. Everyone wants to be independent. But actually the process of surrendering oneself to an authority and doing as that authority instructs one to do, even if that authority may not be perfectly right, of course if they're telling you to do something outside the principles of religion, the principles of Krishna consciousness, like breaking the regs, for example, that's one thing. But even if within a given situation that authority is not right, the actual process of saying, I will do as you say, it does something to our hearts. If it's done in the right consciousness, it softens our hearts and allows us to understand that I am not the controller, I am not the enjoyer. And this is a key aspect, a key reason why we're here. Because in some way or another, we all feel and believe that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. Ishwaraham maham bhogi siddho ham balavan sukhi. I, me and mine. I am the controller. Ishwaraham maham bhogi. I am the enjoyer. Siddho ham. I am perfect. Balavan sukhi. I am strong and I am happy. So everyone feels that they're perfect. We all feel that way in different ways. But actually saying, I will give myself and I will do as you say, helps to break down that conception and helps to develop the conception that I am a servant. So serving the devotees around us helps us to understand and remember, remind ourselves that actually I am not the controller, I am not the enjoyer, but I am a servant. And then when it comes to interacting, when we become qualified through such a meditation, we are qualifying ourselves to then serve Krishna. Because a person who has a consciousness of I am the controller and I am the enjoyer is not qualified to enter Goloka, is not qualified to interact with Krishna. So only when Krishna sees that one's consciousness has been corrected, one has the consciousness of being a servant, only then will he actually become qualified to interact with Krishna, to be with Krishna. So one who is very fixed on the goal, when he sees that I want Krishna, I want to serve Krishna, then he's prepared to do anything in his current environment in order to meet that goal. And so we see that when someone is very serious about the goal of Krishna consciousness, then we see that they're very strict in the practice of the culture of Krishna consciousness. They're very serious in interacting with devotees in the right way. They're very serious about taking, about chanting seriously and about avoiding the offenses. They're very serious in the study of Srila Prabhupada's books. And they're very serious in their service. So whatever service they're given, they will undertake it in a very serious way. They'll do it. And even if it's a service which seems to be relatively insignificant. So one may see cleaning the prasadam room, mopping it, to be very insignificant, a quick job. But actually everything is a service to Krishna. And if one does it with the meditation that this is for Krishna, this is so that Krishna's devotees can come and they can honor prasadam in a nice clean environment. This is so that guests can come and they can see a wonderful, nice, clean environment. And people are attracted by cleanliness. People are attracted by quality, naturally. So if we can do things with that meditation, with that mood, then it changes our whole conception of Krishna consciousness. And everything that we do becomes very special. And Shastra is littered with so many examples of culture. Culture of disrespect, and the results of that, and a culture of respect, and the result of that. So just within this we see Indra and Brihaspati. So one day Indra is sitting on his throne, he's in heaven, and he's very happy because he's being worshipped, he's being glorified. The Gandharvas are singing very melodiously for his pleasure. The Apsaras of heaven are dancing for his pleasure. The Brahmanas are chanting Vedic hymns in his glorification. He has wonderful, huge opulence around him. The canopy above his head is shining like the moon. And he has his very beautiful wife, Sachi, sitting next to him. So he's absolutely intoxicated by this pride. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda ki, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gaur Nitai ki. He has very exalted personalities who are fanning him, very learned individuals. So he's intoxicated. His ego is inflated. He's feeling great pride at his situation. And so within this environment, in comes his guru, Brihaspati. And so what should one do when their guru comes before them? They should get up. They should pay their obeisances. Prabhupada says, at the minimum, when a guest comes, when an ordinary guest comes to one's home, one should stand up, one should offer them a seat and a glass of water. This is a very minimum that one has to do. But Indra is sitting there on his throne and his guru comes before him. But he feels that he's receiving the worship. All eyes are on him, and therefore he neglects his duty to offer respects to his guru. So Brihaspati is humble, but at the same time, for the good of his disciple, he becomes angry and he curses him. So when we disrespect the devotees, then any empowerment that we may have, or any sukriti which we may have gained becomes affected, becomes weakened. And so this is exactly what happened to the demigods. Because of Indra's offense to his guru, Brihaspati, all of the demigods were disempowered. They became weaker. And as a result, they weren't able to defend their kingdom. So when the demons, even the demons are very intelligent, when they found out about the offense committed by Indra to Brihaspati, the demons knew that the demigods would now be weaker. And so at that point, first of all, they worship their own guru, Shukracharya. So very intelligent, very calculating. They worship their own guru, Shukracharya. And in that way, they became empowered. They went to the demigods, and they very easily defeated the demigods, because the demigods had become weakened. So the demigods then ran away from the heavenly planets. They rushed to Brahma, and they asked him for advice, and Brahma was very unhappy. He was very angry, in fact, with Indra. And he explained to them that because you have disrespected your guru, because you have disrespected a devotee of the Lord, therefore you've become disempowered, therefore you've become weakened. So it's amazing how the universe works. It's amazing how the laws of the universe are made in such a way that if we act in the right way, we're rewarded. And if we act in the wrong way, then we're punished. It's very clear. And so we see there are so many pastimes where a culture of respect is shown. When after many years of separation, Sudama Vipra visits Krishna. Sudama is a Brahmana, but he's very poor. Very poor. He comes with an offering for his dear friend Krishna. It's a cloth bag of chipped rice. Very, very simple. And he offers this to a king. Not just any old king, but he offers it to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Sudama is very aware of who this person is. He offers his cloth bag of chipped rice to someone also who's living in such a huge palace, such great opulence. But what does Krishna do? When Sudama approaches and comes and offers his cloth bag of chipped rice, Krishna comes, he gets up from his bed, he sits Sudama down, and he washes his feet with his own hands. So he doesn't order anyone else to do it. He comes himself, Krishna, comes and washes his feet. Because Krishna is showing a very clear message. He wants us to know and he wants us to see that respecting other individuals, other devotees, even if on so many levels Krishna could have thought, I'm a king, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I have so many thousands of wives, I have so much opulence, everyone is watching. What will they think of me afterwards if I respect this person? Sometimes that's a calculation that we make. If I respect this person, then others will think less of me. So Krishna could have made so many calculations, but no. To show everyone that respecting others is such a fundamental part of culture, he washed his feet. And Sudama was so... he didn't enjoy it. So this is the other aspect. When we're respected, how do we react? What is our consciousness? Do we think, yes, I'm worthy of this respect? Yes, actually you should do more. Or do we feel very much unqualified? They say respect should be like a hot potato. If it's given to you, you pass it up. So when we're given any kind of respect, then we should pass it up, we should pass it on. So Sudama was feeling very uncomfortable in this situation. And therefore he's also acting in a very Vaishnava way. One very elevated devotee in Navadvip, he said, and it's always interesting to have an outsider's perspective. He said that the devotees of ISKCON are not very fearful of committing Vaishnava Prad. They're not very fearful of offending Vaishnavas. And so, in that kind of environment, in that kind of a situation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very clearly explains that to commit offenses to the Vaishnavas is like the mad elephant offense. So it's like we're putting so much effort. We're giving our lives to cultivate a wonderful, beautiful garden. Our bhakti, our love for Krishna is likened to a garden. So a gardener will put so much effort into cultivating his garden. Does anyone do gardening here? Has anyone done gardening before? No? Yeah? Okay, so a few. So much effort goes into weeding first. You have to take all the weeds out. Then you have to prepare the land. Then you have to create furrows. Then you have to plant the seeds. Then you have to water the seeds. And then eventually a small creeper comes and it grows and you have to cultivate it and water it regularly. So much effort that we put in to our bhakti. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes that committing Vaishnava Prad insulting other Vaishnavas is like letting an elephant into that garden, into your bed of roses, into the field that you've been cultivating. And what will an elephant naturally do? He will trample all over it. So we have to continue to protect our garden. We have to continue to protect our bhakti. And that will come if we really respect and offer respect according to the position of a devotee in relation to ourselves. So respect is given, but respect is given in different ways according to the devotee that we're dealing with. So there's a way to interact with seniors. There's a way to interact with equals. And there's a way to interact with juniors. And this is very clearly defined and described in Shastra. So when we actually develop these qualities, and when we actually have a very wonderful environment, then we can feel very confident in inviting people into this fold. So sometimes I wonder, especially when I may bring a new person to the temple, or I'm thinking about, should I bring this person, should I invite this person to the temple? I was discussing with Ravindra the other day, and he was talking about bringing new people to the temple. We have to ask ourselves a question. What environment are we bringing them into? Are we really bringing them into an environment where they can really take up Krishna consciousness, where they'll feel inspired? One of the first things a person will look at is, how do the people interact with one another? How do they deal with one another? Can I see myself? Do I want to be in that situation, in this environment, in a few months or a year's time? Am I inspired by dealing, by being with these people? Do they act nicely with one another? Would it be nice to live with these people, to serve with these people? So when we actually live this philosophy, then we can feel very confident, because then we can feel that we're bringing people into something very, very special. Then we can go out and then we can really feel inspired by giving people Krishna consciousness. And this eagerness to give people Krishna consciousness comes as a natural result. Because when you feel humble, then kirtaniyasa dahari, then we can chant unlimitedly, forever, eternally. And in that consciousness, one feels so happy, one feels so elated, and therefore a natural result of humility is taste for chanting. And a natural result of taste for chanting, a taste for the process of Krishna consciousness, is the desire to give this to others. If you feel happy in Krishna consciousness, then the natural result is to give it to others. And if one isn't feeling that way, then there's a problem. Because in the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the movement of Srila Prabhupada, there's so much emphasis on giving Krishna consciousness to others. And if we're not in that mood, then there's something wrong. So I was with Keshavarti Maharaj on Tuesday, and we took him to the airport, myself and Gaurakrishnapur, and I was driving. So we went to the departures area, and I let Keshavarti Maharaj off, and I went to the car park to park the car. And I maybe took 5 or 6 minutes to get from when I left them to parking the car and returning to them. And Maharaj had... He was at the desk, he was at the BA check-in desk. And within just a few minutes, he'd striked up a wonderful conversation with the person who was checking in the bags. And it was a very serious interaction. And she was saying, she was opening her heart. Within just a few minutes, she was opening her heart. And she was saying how she's been through a lot of difficulty recently. And she was saying, what happens after death? What happens to us after death? And so Maharaj was giving the science of the soul. He's explaining how we are spirit souls and how the soul, just like it goes from one car to another, similarly, the soul goes from one body to another. So he was describing, just giving the analogy from the second chapter of the Gita. And then he's explaining more about the process of Krishna consciousness and more about the basics of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And she was transfixed. She was listening to him so intently and kind of in autopilot doing the ticketing. And it was so inspiring to see that. And then afterwards, Marge explained. He said that when you want to give others Krishna consciousness, when you have that deep desire to help people, when you have that meditation, then people feel it. And the soul becomes attracted. And he said the soul just jumps out. It jumps out at you. And there's nothing that can stop that process. And so naturally, people whose souls are dormant become alive. They just come and they want to know. They want to ask. Because ultimately, this is the eternal religion of the soul. This is where the soul belongs. And so it was very inspiring to see that. So how can we become an instrument of compassion? How can we become an instrument to share this Krishna consciousness with others? And so similarly, when we're out doing Harinam, prasadam distribution, book distribution, university preaching, whatever kind of sharing, outreach activity we may be doing, if we go with the consciousness of really helping people and giving this Krishna consciousness to other people, and that really developing and meditating on that mood of compassion, that mood of really wanting to help people, that's when magic happens. So if you're out giving a book, I've had the experience on some occasions that when you're out and really in the meditation of not how many books to go out, not how much Lakshmi to come in, not anything else, but how can I just help this person? How can I give Prabhupada's mercy to this person? When we go out with that meditation, it's magic. Preaching is magic. And it's such an enlivening thing. Yayatma suprasiddhyati. It brings real life to the soul. It brings real satisfaction to the soul. So if one hasn't tried it, then one, yes, you can be happy and you can be satisfied not preaching. You can live in the mode of goodness. But in the pastime of Narad Muni, when he's living in the forest and he's meditating, it's described that he's very much in the mode of goodness. But Prabhupada explains that that is the last snare of Maya, the last trap of Maya. Because we can be very happy and very satisfied and feel that things are going on very smoothly when we're in the mode of goodness. But ultimately we have to transcend that goodness. And it has to become pure goodness. It has to become Shuddha Sattva. So goodness is great, but transcendence is better. So when we're actually preaching, that really elevates us to a different platform. And that takes us, that can allow us and make us open to an experience in Krishna consciousness which is unrivaled, which is the best, and which is real life, which is real Krishna consciousness as given by Prabhupada. And that is what Prabhupada has come to give us. So if we're not doing that, then we're missing out ultimately. Ultimately we're missing out. No one else. It's not a problem for anyone else ultimately. Ultimately we're missing out. So just wanted to end with a quote from Prabodhana Saraswati. He says in his Chaitanya Chandramrita, he says, to the degree that we surrender to Lord Chaitanya's service, to that degree we gain qualification for the service to Radharani's lotus feet in Vrindavan. So I suppose the only question that we have to ask ourselves is, what is Lord Chaitanya's service? And so I'm open to be corrected, but in my understanding, Lord Chaitanya's service is very clear. So I'm going to end there. I think it's 8:30, so we should probably stop. Thank you very much. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Is it a question? Sorry.